accession number 23439, reel 2.
We never had disciplinary troubles. They were all volunteers anyway. It was a volunteer army. And we didn't have those problems. You'll always get the odd man who's a bit of a trouble to somebody and gets shifted onto something else. But no, we didn't have any troubles. I say you don't with a volunteer army.
What kind of equipment did you have in your troop?
By that time, we had Matilda tanks, which the British Army didn't want, so they pushed over to us. And that was a slow-moving infantry support tank.
What did you and the others think of the Matilda tanks?
Well, those who actually did get into action with them were quite happy. They had good reliable guns, had a 2-pounder gun and a turret, and there was a bigger gun, a 3-inch howitzer, I think they called it. But they were not very manoeuvrable, they were very slow. I think they weighed about 28 tons, and the terrain was not any good for them at all. Whenever we took them out, we got them bogged. The only time I ever got into an action where we were going to swipe a few Japs, we got one tank well and truly bogged down, and then the track got blown off another, and that was that. They were a failure, really. The only tanks I ever knew that were any good up there were light American Stuart tanks. They were just a light cruiser tank, and they were used a bit up there. We didn't have them, but some troops did. But they were much lighter and more manoeuvrable.
Did your troop have a letter or a number to it?
We were part of C Squadron. The group that I took to North Bougainville, only two tanks there. There were two troops of two tanks each. I was in command of one pair. Another lieutenant in command of the other pair, until he had one of his blown up, and that left him with one. But mine, I never had anything awful happen like that. I couldn't say I killed any Japs. I couldn't say they killed any of us. I couldn't say I killed any, but I think I probably gave some a scare. But when we got to Madang, when we left Madang and got to Bougainville, we were in closer proximity to the enemy than we had been before. Trying to think of the name of the port. Anyway, Empress Augusta Bay. That's where the Americans had established a base. The bulk of our regiment went south, carrying out what was called a mopping up operation. And I say four tanks went north to Bonus Peninsula. And I was on Bonus Peninsula at the very end of the war. I can remember all that pretty clearly. The Japs were only a few hundred yards in front of us, and we were planning to go up and take the next ridge. I had to go out that morning. This is when the bomb dropped. With the local infantry commander to see where we could take the tanks to support them in moving up to this ridge. Well, we must have left the infantry area. I was with the infantry commander. Must have left at round about daylight and made our way quietly as we could through the jungle to right up very close to the Japs. Matter of fact, you could hear them cleaning their guns, hear the bolts rattling in their guns. While that was going on, one of these infantry wallahs decided he would catch a butterfly, one of these big iridescent blue butterflies, chasing it with his hat. However, the Japs didn't hear us, and the infantry commander said to me, "Now you just listen," he said, "we've gone as far forward as we can go, and they've been as quiet as mice." He said, "You listen to them when I tell them to withdraw." He said, "They'd be like a load of baby elephants." And they were. He told them to withdraw. We'd seen all we wanted to see. We're going back to our little perimeter, not his, our little perimeter. And they turned to go. Well, if any Japs anywhere, they certainly heard us going back. Anyhow, we got back into our perimeter. And oh, this talk. Big bomb being dropped. War's finished. And we thought the chaps were putting on a turn, because you come back from one of those patrols and you're all a bit het up from it. And of course the chaps back in camp think it's one hell of a joke. And we thought they were putting on a big turn for us. And then we discovered that something had happened. A major bomb had been dropped, which had done a lot of damage somewhere in Japan. And it gradually filtered through during the day that something like that had happened. An order came down from divisional headquarters, no more patrols, except security patrols. They didn't tell us much about it, but by that time the word had got out that it was something to do with an atomic bomb. But there were no more patrols outside the wire. And then, was it 2 days later the second bomb was dropped? It was only days between them. When that happened, the Australian planes came over and they dropped leaflets. And that leaflet I showed you with that illustration on the back, you can take that out. Take the thing out. It's they dropped those leaflets with that symbol that the natives would recognise as being one of theirs. And on the other side, in Pidgin English, I've done a bit of a translation, it's a message to tell the natives of the area that the war was over. Now, it wasn't officially over, but it was over. And they had that illustration just to attract the natives' eyes, because they would recognise it as a little handbasket. And with that message on the back, written in Pidgin English. Well, those leaflets came over and they dropped them everywhere. And within moments, there wasn't a person left inside that camp. They were all outside the perimeter getting their souvenirs. That's mine.
Can I describe in words what you've given me to look at? The pamphlet, as you say, has got this picture of the basket on one side.
Yes, it's a little hand basket that they would carry personal possessions in. It's woven out of grasses, probably. Softer stuff.
And it appears to be green, red and yellow.
I don't think the colours had any significance. It's just the way they like to weave them. They seem to carry them quite a lot. The few little possessions they had, they carried in them. No doubt they could tuck them in their belts quite easily too.
And on the other side from the basket, there's the Australian crest.
Yes.
And the emu.
That was our hat badge.
Yeah. And then underneath, I'm going to attempt to pronounce what it says.
Well, I think I've written in my translation, haven't
yeah,
I?
Yeah, but I'll just pronounce it just for the sake of yes. interest. It says, "Old Boy Harim Tok, Number 1 Bilog Japan, Im Itok Ino Like Pait Mo, Paiti Pinis, Mipela Winim Pinis Algeta, Behind Quick Time, Mipela, Kalabusim Ol Japan Man, You Look Out, Japan igat kros lung you eat, kilia lungim olsem bipo, sipos you lukim sampira, tok tok lung soldier bilog you me, gavman e tok. You can almost guess some of the words, can't you? But then you give me the translation as well, and your translation is this. I'm going to read this out.
Well, see if you can.
All boys hear him talk. Number one belong Japan. Him he talk. He no like fight more. Fight he finish. My fellow win. Finish all together. By and quick time. My fellow jail all Japan man. You look out. Japan he get cross with you yet. Kill you all the same as before. Suppose you see same fellow. Talk to soldier belonging to me. Government he talk.
That's pidgin English for you.
And it says here that you were SX 20837, Scott Force, 2nd 4th Australian Armoured Regiment, GP. GP?
God knows, I don't remember now. GP. It wouldn't skip me now.
Who made the translation?
Oh, I did the translation.
So you knew the language?
Oh, well, you can work it out with pidgin, you know. You'd have to be pretty dumb not to work it out after a while if you know anything about it. There are ways of expressing things. Now, the piano has arrived. I always remember that one. He come, big fella, bocca, sing, sing. You know, you fight teeth. He no fight back, he cry out. That means the piano has arrived. Bocca sing sing is, gramophone's a bocca sing sing, a music box, a piano, wireless, anything that makes those noises. It's the way it goes. It's a stupid language, but it served its purpose. And it's still serving its purpose up there. It's very, very widely understood. Some of their native dialects are very, very simple. If you understand Motu, I believe you get the hang of most of them.
Motu?
Motu is, if there is a universal language in Papua New Guinea, it's probably Motu. And if you do understand Motu, you're well away to understand the other dialect, so I'm told.
When you crossed from New Guinea to Solomon Islands, what kind of boat did you go in?
Oh, Ellis, well, landing ship tank. It was an LST. They had big bow doors that opened up, and you simply drove in up ramps into the front. What the tonnage was, I don't know.
Was there a proper port to land at in Bougainville?
Oh, yes. Well, the Americans had been there, and they had made a port there in Empress Augusta Bay. I can't remember the name of the place now. But it's Empress Augusta Bay, anyhow. On the, I suppose you say, southern coast, south-western coast, about halfway down the island.
What did the terrain of the Solomons look like after New Guinea? Was it just the same?
Well, the coastal part wasn't boggy. It was all pumice sand. There's a high mountain range runs a great deal of the length of the island, quite a high mountain range, volcanic. From there, at Empress Augusta Bay, you can see Mount Bagana, which I believe is about 7,000 feet. That's an active volcano, smoking all the time. But we didn't have the bogging problems there in that part, because I say it was pumice sand and all relatively hard. When we got further north, up into Bowness Peninsula, well, things were pretty boggy up there. When people talk about the atom bomb and the awful things about the atom bomb, I let it go on for a bit, and they say, oh, well, it stopped my war, didn't it? It did, didn't it? Stopped it overnight. We would have gone out the next day to try to take this ridge. There would have been casualties. Don't know what would have happened. But it stopped my war bang on.
So did your unit not take any casualties then?
We didn't take any casualties up there.
So you didn't actually have to fight the Japanese because of the bomb?
No. There was nothing more after that at all. I'm just talking about my own personal part of it. There was never anything more at all. 2 days, I think two, or was it the day after the first, no, 2 days after the first bomb. One night they shelled us. They missed, the shells went overhead and landed way back in the jungle somewhere. And after that, there was never a single incident. It was very strange what happened there. The emperor told them to put down their arms, and they did. The official handover, surrender, took place back there in Empress Augusta Bay. Several weeks later, our general, General Savage, took the surrender, the formal surrender. The Japanese general came down with his escort. And this happened just a few hundred yards from, well, not hundreds of yards, from our actual camp. I didn't see it because I wasn't in on that. But the Japanese general came up formally, presented his sword to General Savage, who received it. And then the Japanese general whistled up a couple of flunkies who brought up a wooden box. Presented that to General Savage. Everybody got very, very suspicious. They called up the bomb disposal people. This wooden box was taken back into the sand pit back behind Divi headquarters, carefully opened it. You never guess what was in it. Two porcelain vases. And when people say to me, Japs are no different from anybody else. I said, can you imagine one of our generals presenting anybody with two porcelain vases under those conditions? Even having two porcelain vases there. But of course, when you think about it, the Japanese are great ones for little gifts. You never do anything for a Japanese without a little gift being involved in it. And I suppose it was just part of the same thing. Whether all that went into the war diary, I doubt it. I suppose, as it was a personal gift, I suppose the Savage family still have them. But that's what actually happened just across the way.
Did you witness all this?
I wasn't in it. I couldn't have been. No, no, no. It's divisional people. Not lowly lieutenants. But we knew all about it at the time. But I doubt if it would have gotten into the war diary because there wouldn't have been any reason for it.
Did you get a good close-up of Japanese once they surrendered?
Not on Bougainville, but I did on New Britain.
How did you
on Bougainville, had very, very little to do with them at all. But after the surrender, we then had to send a detachment across to New Britain, again off the north coast of New Guinea, and occupy the place. There were 95,000 Japanese on New Britain and 10,000 Formosans. And I never heard of a single incident between the occupying forces and the Japanese. Never heard of a single incident. General Imamura was their general. He'd been British, trained by the British Army during the First World War, I'm told. He was asked, General Eastick was our general over there, and he was asked by General Eastick to submit a nominal roll of every Japanese, or Formosan for that matter, on New Britain, and gave him, I think, 3 weeks to do it. It was delivered within a fortnight, and up until the time I left, so a couple of months later, they never found a mistake in it. But I say, General Imamura was British Army trained.
What was the opinion of you and the other Aussies towards the Japanese enemy?
Well, actually, when we had anything to do with them personally, on New Britain, we got on with them quite well. There was no animosity by then. They'd been told to lay down their arms, and they laid them down. Various odd things could happen. We had working parties in our camp every day from the Japanese occupying forces, and they had to parade and hand over. We had to parade in front of our orderly officer, and then there had to be formal handover to their orderly officer, and off they marched. Well, on one occasion there was a bit of a ragtag parade, and our orderly officer complained to their orderly officer that he wasn't satisfied with the parade. Their orderly officer called up his sergeant major, slapped him back and forth across the face with his hand. Their sergeant major called up the nearest man in the ranks, slapped him back and forth across the face. They all marched off singing. It shows they are very different people, doesn't it?
Yes. Did all this face slapping have any beneficial effect? Did all this face slapping have any beneficial
effect? Oh yes, we didn't have ragtag parades again. Oh yes, that was all right. But when people say things to me about the Japanese, I say, well, don't forget, they are Japanese and they think differently. And they do, and that's a good example of it. Nobody took offence at that. Honour had been satisfied. Off they went singing.
Did you come across any of the Allied prisoners of war?
No.
What did you think of the inhabitants of the Solomon Islands?
The native inhabitants?
Yes.
Native inhabitants are very different from New Guinea ones. New Guinea natives were tractable. They were likeable. You couldn't say anything else. They were likeable people. You had to work very hard with the natives of Bougainville to get on any light of friendly footing with them at all. They were very different people. They looked much the same. They were much blacker. They were shiny blue-black, beautiful-looking people, but very much minds of their own. I never had very much to do with them, to know anybody who did. But they were very independent people. And their behaviour in the years since, with all this copper mining that's ruining their country, has borne that out. They're not easy people to deal with. They don't want strangers there ruining their country.
Why did you not have very much to do with them?
Well, no occasion to.
What about the native people in New Britain?
In New Britain, they're very much the same as those in New Guinea, very tractable people. You could get on with them quite easily. They understood a little bit of English from the missions, no doubt. The women used to come down to the camp with their fruit from time to time. But we had no occasion, really, to have much to do with them. I saw more of them back behind Madang, really because of those patrols we used to do back there. Well, the patrols, well, there were patrols there in New Britain. I remember taking one out one morning, got to the fence, the wire fence, and the provo on duty was checking off my driver's papers. We were in a jeep, and American jeep, because the driver was on my left. And as he was having his papers checked, a Japanese passed me on my right, and I didn't notice him. He said, "Good morning, sir," and I saluted, so I saluted back. And I turned to the Provo sergeant. I said, "Who spoke to me?" In perfectly clear English. He said, "Oh, that Jap over there." And I looked at him. He said, "That was General Imamura." Ex-British Army officer.
Which did you prefer being on? Solomon's, New Guinea or New Britain?
Oh, I couldn't answer that question because they were so different. As far as resenting having been there, I don't resent having seen any of them. I've always been one to want to see everything. And what I saw in Madang was different from what I saw in Bougainville and what I saw in New Britain. I'd always want to climb an active volcano on my own. I did it in New Britain. You know, the various things that you do in different places that you remember. I've always been interested in natural things, things to be seen.
Were there any problems with wildlife in any of these places, apart from insects like mosquitoes?
No. Wildlife?
Yes.
Oh, heavens, no. Nothing like that in New Guinea. Well, if you got in the way of a wild boar, I suppose yes, but you're not likely to.
Did you find the climate trying?
Yes, I found the humidity very trying. Very trying indeed. I think we all did. It takes, you know, getting to 100% humidity, it takes all the energy out of you. And force yourself to do anything.
What kind of uniform did you have?
Cotton drill stuff.
What colour?
Basically green. Start off being khaki, but we had to dye all this stuff, and a lot of home dyeing was pretty, pretty wild and woolly, I can tell you. Basically green, I suppose, yes.
Did you come across anything to do with traditional religions there?
No. No. I remember all our camp buildings were held up when we got to Madang. Our mess huts and things were held up because the natives were building them. And they wanted to build them, these huts they want to build, as they had always built huts. They knew how to build huts. That's what they wanted to build for us.